Now, across the newspapers today, you won't be surprised to see a lot more coverage of price rises, from reports of diesel hitting €2 a litre to major hikes in the hospitality sector. And of course, we had those CSO figures this week showing that inflation has already hit 7%, a 22-year high, and is predicted to rise even further. I'm joined now by ICTU President and General Secretary of the country's biggest public sector union, FORSA, Kevin Callanan. You're very welcome, Kevin.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Kevin, you opened up negotiations on public sector pay with the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform this week. What did you go in asking for?
Well, I suppose just to give a bit of context first, 17 months ago when we finalised the current public service pay deal, nobody was predicting that we would be in the situation we're in now with 7% CPI announced last Thursday. Clearly, for public servants and workers right across the economy, living standards are falling where pay is not keeping pace with inflation. So look at the current deal for public servants. It was a 2-year deal to cover last year and this year. The annualized percentage increases in the deal, 1% on the 1st of October each year, amounts to 0.25% annualized. Last year, the annualized rate of inflation was 2.4%. This year, we have various predictions from the Department of Finance, the Central Bank, the ESRI. They range from 6.25% to 6.7%, 6.8%. But there's also a downside forecast that it could be even worse than that. So we have a serious problem. And what the public service unions did in March was we triggered the review clause that's in the current agreement. And we then, this week, got the working through of the government response to that. And at that meeting, the officials from Public Expenditure and Reform indicated that the government accepted that the underlying assumptions in the agreement had changed. There was no discussion at this stage about what that amounts to in terms of quantum or anything like that. But they also indicated that the government was keen to get a line of sight on public service pay for next year, and that they wanted to try to negotiate a deal that would give some certainty for the budget in October. So we're very much at the foothill of a very large mountain, Katie, and at this stage it's way too early to predict how the talks will go.
And are you envisaging a 1-year pay deal, given how volatile the inflation situation is, or are we looking at a multi-year claim?
Well, we're saying very clearly that there needs to be an adjustment this year to take account of what has happened. We're open to talk about next year as well as part of something. Obviously, that will need to be done quickly over the next few weeks. And assuming that we get an outcome, which maybe is a big assumption, we would then put that to ballots of our individual unions and see where we are.
Okay, so let's talk numbers to some degree, because people will be out there today wondering, what can we look forward to? You know, are we looking at 2 or 3%, or are we looking at numbers, at increases to match inflation?
Well, we've absolutely no indication from the government as to how far they will go in respect of the gap that I have indicated. Obviously, it's not just the public sector. Our private sector committee of Congress is meeting on Tuesday and is likely to revise the advice to unions on pay bargaining in the private sector. Because remember that pay deals are at all sorts of different stages across the economy. They might be of different durations. They might be up for negotiation sooner or later. Some of them will have review clauses, others won't. So we have been saying, as a Congress, we've been saying that one of the things that makes the cost of living crisis worse in Ireland is the fact that our social wage is so low by European standards. What does that mean? Well, the social wage is a measure of how much income support and public services can reduce the cost of living. And there's a very clear opportunity now, if the government is prepared to grasp it in the next few weeks, to address that in a way that can help to deal with the cost of living crisis, not just in the public sector, but across the private sector and for workers and citizens generally.
Okay, is it just basic that you're going in there first and saying we can't have our workers worse off after this deal than they are at present? So it has to at least compensate for that 7% CPI, the cost of living increase.
The job of trade unions is to protect living standards. And the way in which that can be done is through pay increases or through other social spending measures. And we would want the government to address the gap, the very serious gap that we've identified, by making a realistic and sensible offer to address the problem.
Okay. I'm still not very clear what you're asking for.
Well, we haven't put a quantum on what we're looking for, but the job of trade unions now and has always been to protect living standards, and that's what we'll be trying to do in these discussions.
Okay, outside of, and obviously you're saying it's not just going to be about pay, there's other ways in which the government can address people's cost of living issues. What kind of issues are you going to be talking to them about?
Well, not necessarily in the pay discussions, but possibly through other fora, we need to talk about the fact that, you know, for instance, in this country, childcare for many working parents is equivalent to a second mortgage. We need to look at the fact that, you know, the housing crisis is, you know, as we know, day in, day out, is a major problem for workers. We need to see that the fact that in other European countries, people don't have to budget for, you know, basic healthcare provision, for example, or elder care services. These are things that, you know, need to be grappled with. And Ireland as a country has an important opportunity here to actually once and for all take a sensible approach to this.
Okay, but I mean, I'm sure we'll be asking the minister in a moment, but he will say that they have been grappling with childcare, with housing, and indeed with healthcare. What exactly are you saying they could be doing differently? Or you know, can you just give us something concrete in terms of what you're putting to them and saying this would make a huge difference to our members?
Well, what we're saying is that Ireland is a low-tax economy, and one of the obvious areas where it's low-tax is in relation to labour taxes and employer PRSI in particular. If we were at a European average, you know, of peer group European countries in terms of employer PRSI, it would bring in several billion extra income that would allow us to do a lot of the things that are taken for granted in other European countries. And if workers and citizens were experiencing that, the impact of the cost of living crisis would be so much less, and it would fall less to pay, whether it's public service or private sector, to address the problem.
So employers' PRSI could take some of the heavy lifting here.
Absolutely.
In relation to the pay, is the reason that you are not putting all your eggs in the pay basket, as it seems from what you're saying, is this because you're concerned that we could actually end up feeding the inflationary cycle here with pay claim feeding another pay claim?
Well, I think in relation to inflation, one of the important things to say is that, you know, workers don't cause inflation. In fact, workers are the victims of inflation. And if we had a situation of sustained inflation and sustained catch-up pay claims over a long period of time, there is a risk that this so-called wage inflation spiral would damage national competitiveness. We obviously operate in a global economy. We obviously are conscious of the ability of employers to pay. In the public service, there has been a huge transformation in the public finances, even since last October's budget. So we're arguing that the government as an employer is well able to address some of the problem. But no union is going to go into any employer and expect that they would grant pay increases if it jeopardises that business. So it will fall to collective bargaining on a company-by-company basis across the economy.
It's in the private sector, but when it comes to the public sector, we know, for instance, the era of borrowing money for nothing is past. That heyday is over now. So could we be, compromising the national finances?
Well, that isn't the picture that we get when we get the monthly expenditure exchequer figures and we see how revenue and exchequer is performing. So there's no question that there's been a huge bounce back post-COVID in this country in terms of the public finances. Obviously, every country, in terms of its COVID response, had to resort to abnormal borrowing levels and so on and so forth. The one thing, Katie, that we can't afford to do, though, is we can't afford to send some sort of austerity message here where we damage consumer confidence, where we reduce domestic demand. The reality is that, we need to prioritize those on low and middle income earnings. They're the people who spend all they have. And by spending all they have, they generate further revenue in the form of VAT and excise duties and so on.
When do you expect to get this through? Because you're saying it's urgent for your members.
Well, we've asked, both parties have asked the Workplace Relations Commission to assist the talks. In my view, those talks will need to conclude within a relatively short period of time, over a few weeks.
A few weeks, okay. Martin Hayden, is ICTU pushing an open door here?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to state that we are in the last year of building momentum, which is the current pay deal, and obviously that will see another 1% rise.
Sure, that's... You know, that's nowhere going to nowhere near what's required now to keep people.
Obviously, we're in changed circumstances for all workers, private sector and public sector, and everybody, whether they're working or otherwise, are feeling the impact of our high cost of living. But just to make the point that over the last 12 years, I think our country has been very well served by successive public sector pay agreements. They've worked for the sector workers, but they've also worked for the taxpayer in terms of the industrial harmony that they've provided. You know, as Kevin has outlined, public sector unions triggered that review clause. Minister McGrath brought a memo to Cabinet a couple of weeks ago, and Cabinet and Government has agreed to engage in this process that has now started. But in terms of the rising cost of living and the implications that has for everybody in this country, you know, our inflation rate has been outlined as at 7%, but the real rising cost and but the driver of that has been energy prices, costs increased by about 45%. And that's why...
That's one element of it. I mean,
but it's a key driver of it because, you know, if we want to talk later, we were going to talk about food security.
It does feed into other increases.
Food is up because it's directly impacted by energy costs. It is the main driver. And that's why so much of our interventions since the last budget, on top of what we did in terms of addressing cost of living and those measures in the budget that had a €600 million income package for all workers, that all workers are benefiting from this year. All of the measures since then have been like, you know, the €200 energy credit has been focused on the energy cost, the 225 for the most vulnerable on fuel allowance, the 20% cut and the different cuts on the levies because the energy costs are
I want to go to the rest of the panel. Sorry to cut across you, Minister, but I just want to put this to you in relation to the funding of this, how we're going to fund this pay claim. If the current building momentum plan, which we I think is generally acknowledged, is not now fit for purpose in terms of, you know, what has happened in the cost of living crisis, if that was already going to cost us €600 million this year, we could be talking about eye-watering figures if we're going to seriously deal and help workers, you know, deal with the impact that all of this has had on their outgoings.
So the point I was making is that, you know, government has to take a holistic view here. It looks at all of our citizens and how best we support them in what is a really difficult time for people, for our public sector workers, for our private sector workers, for the elderly, for the young and for the most vulnerable as well. And our interventions will have to be measured. But the reason we have the financial resources to do that now is because we've managed the economy well in the past. And any decisions we make have to make sure we continue to have that capacity to respond, to be able to help
people.
Do you
need to dampen down expectations here, though?
No, like, it's not my job to kind of circumvent or to, you know, preempt what's going to happen in these discussions. This is one element of government's response in terms of acknowledging the challenge that there is for everybody in our country right now.
OK, Matt Carthy. Listening to both Kevin Callanan and the minister there, where do you think this might land?
Well, an agreement has to be found. You know, I think we need to just state what is the obvious. If a worker is seeing their costs increase and their salary is either stagnant or not increasing to the same level, and that in effect is a wage cut. So the question is, as a society, do we expect either workers in the private or public sector to operate in a scenario where they're getting wage cuts at a time when the economy, despite all of the challenges, is going fairly well? So there's two ways, as you've already outlined, that we can address this. One is through wage rates. The other is in relation to addressing the cost of living crisis. Martin has talked quite a lot about energy costs, and of course he's right. He hasn't mentioned, of course, that the government haven't gone anywhere near far enough in terms of actually doing what it can to curtail that. But you can't, in an Irish context, talk about cost of living without talking about the underlying problems that have actually had families and workers under severe stress for quite a number of years. That's housing in the first instance. We see another Daft report, Daft.ie report this week that shows that rents are quite quite literally out of control. There are people who in any other generation would be paying a manageable mortgage, instead are locked into a vicious cycle. Childcare has been mentioned. On both of those areas, government haven't introduced the type of measures that have been proposed to them that would address those soaring costs. So what we've seen in terms of energy hikes and fuel hikes in particular, I'm looking on my way up today at diesel costs, exactly where they were the last time the government introduced a minimal cut in excise. All of those additional costs are actually, for many, the straw that is breaking the camel's back in terms of their family finances. So this needs to be holistic. So obviously the WRC will be engaged in terms of the wage negotiations. But at a practical, immediate level, the government need to again revisit the issue of cost of living measures such as those that Sinn Féin have advocated.
Annie Hoey, in terms of the wage claims, I mean, when you see where the cost of living has gone and inflation has gone, the 7% figure, and you know, I know the SRI are saying possibly up to 8.5%. I think just last month they were predicting that. This is unchaseable, though, isn't it? I mean, if we're in a very difficult position when you see figures like that for inflation,
yeah,
and a very dangerous position.
Yeah,
economists.
We've not in recent past have been through very difficult economic times, but that is the responsibility and role of government, is to figure this out. You know, that is what they're elected to do, and that is what their mandate is to support the people who are living and working here in Ireland. You know, we've been saying Ireland needs a pay rise for, you know, that jingle almost at this stage, but we've been saying that for quite some time. We've got really high rates of low paid workers, you know, and obviously this is affecting workers at every level, but like, if you take a moment to think about our lowest paid workers and the struggle that they're facing, you know, the minimum wage is 10 something, the cost of living or a living wage is considered to be 12.90. It could actually possibly be even higher now with inflation.
Would you support what Kevin Canlan was saying there in relation to employers' PRSI?
Yes. Yeah.
And there should be increases there.
Well, I think I'm not looking at figures right now, but you know, I think everyone has a role to play in this. You know, we've in the education sector have talked a lot about, you know, employers' contribution to the education sector, whether that needs to be increased in order to support more people being able to access education, because of course the ones who benefit are the employers. You know, so I think there's a number of different things that need to be done, but we certainly support Fórsa's and ICTU's call for renegotiation of the pay deal.
On that issue, Martin Hayden, employers' PRSI, does it need to be increased?
Look, I think when you look at any response here, we have to recognise the pressure that everybody's under. So we've talked here obviously about workers and the individuals, but employers too have come out of a post-pandemic phase and have, you know, which has very much been about survival, and government has stepped in. And
In some sectors have done very well.
Some have done very well, but an awful lot of businesses needed government to stand in to remain afloat with e-wiz and pandemic unemployment.
Isn't it time for a bit of payback now, perhaps, people would say.
But I'm just making the point, they're getting back on their feet now. So look, all these different elements all have to be considered, but any kind of touch on it there, government has to take a balanced approach and make sure that when in trying to fix one problem, we don't create other problems, and we are mindful of where those challenges are, and that we look at this in the round.
And when obviously Matt Carthy touched on it there, as did Kevin, housing is a huge, huge part of this and has been for such a long time now. And we saw yesterday, I was struck by those photographs from Kildare, actually, not your constituency, the other side of Kildare, of the Taoiseach at the launch of 29 affordable houses. Yesterday.
He got to Martin's constituency as well.
But it's just struck me that if 29 affordable houses, very welcome, obviously, in the current climate, but if a modest enough contribution to the housing crisis merits the appearance of the Taoiseach to launch them, like, what does that say about where we're at in terms of dealing with the supply issue?
Oh, well, obviously, we'll have 30,000 houses be delivered over the next year. We see the impact that the pandemic has had in terms of slowing down the rate of construction at that time. It's obviously had an impact in all of our areas. But when we see our goals and our plans around the housing plan, we know these. And obviously, rent is a very big consideration here in terms of increased cost there and availability of properties for rent. But it's it's, you know, government is it's its top priority in terms of housing, and we are delivering, and we have put a huge amount of taxpayers' resources and finances into that area.
Yeah, I just want to,
because it's just, you know, you talk about these things that are going to come down the line. I have a pal who just found her living situation. She's going to have to move out. She's in her mid-30s, and she's decided she's going to, like, in her mid-30s, doesn't have anywhere to go, has a great job, and this week she's going to pack up and move to Brussels because it's a 45% less for rent. You know, she's lived here in Ireland her whole life. She's my best friend. We moved to Dublin together, and she just was like, I can't live anywhere. I've nowhere to go. So 30,000 houses sounds great, well and wonderful, but that 30,000 houses isn't keeping her here. Those 30,000 houses aren't helping people who today are getting notice that they need to move out, the house is being sold, all of these other things, and they just simply cannot afford. And she was sharing a house. She's 36, sharing a house, no hope of, you know, being able to live on her own, never mind buy somewhere. And she just said, tossed her hands in the air, and she's like, I'm going to move. And like, that's a big decision in your mid-30s to be like, I'm going to pack up and move to another country because it's 45% less for rent over there. You know, that's crazy.
Again, in another capital capital city of another European country. Kevin Callanan, you've got your Force conference coming up this week. I presume these pay talks are going to be high on the agenda.
This will be the top and the central priority, not just for Force, but I think right across the whole of the trade union movement. You asked for some figures earlier, Katie. At 6.7% inflation, it's obviously gone up last Thursday to 7%. What this means for the ordinary person, the buying power of somebody on the full-time national minimum wage, now that's €21,000 per annum, is down €25 a week. For somebody on full-time average annual earnings, they're down €47 a week in buying power. That's the level of this crisis.
And I'll ask you one more time when you're going back in to those talks again Monday week. What will you be saying? Will you be saying you can, at very minimum, we have to come back to where we were before this inflationary spiral took off?
What, like all negotiators, Katie, we'll be trying to get the best deal possible. We'll bring it back to our executive, and ultimately our members will decide.
Okay, we'll leave that one there.